Hello to all of the music makers and dreamers of dreams out there today, and welcome to this scrumdiddlyumptious 24th episode of In the Know, your 25-minute dive into the modern employee experience and what we can do to make it better. I'm JD, the Chief Learning Architect here at Exonify, and your guide for this whimsical tour of the world of upskilling. That's right. Today's tour isn't about everlasting gobstoppers. No, I'm going to have candy all over my office after this show. It's about everlasting learning and the changing nature of career development in today's workplace. And for today's tour, no golden ticket required. You see, the biggest mistake that I made coming out of college was thinking that building a career was like riding an elevator. You push the right buttons and you move up and up and up, and you eventually get where you want to go. And you see where I landed, dressed like discount Willy Wonka on LinkedIn. In reality, career development is more like the great glass Wonkavator at the end of the movie. It doesn't just go up and down. No, it goes sideways and slantways and long ways and back ways and every which ways that you can think. And there was no way of knowing where my career would take me as a 19-year-old movie theater manager, but I needed the right skills to be able to open doors along the way. And that is what we're talking about here today. How we can leverage continuous upskilling to put our employees on the Wonkavator to success. But we're not alone on our tour. We have a very special guest with us. And no, it is not a spoiled little girl with big lips or an odd little boy with a cowboy obsession. We're joined by Lori Niles Hoffman, senior EdTech strategist at Niles Nolan, who's going to help us move beyond career paths and adopt continuous upskilling as the key to career and organizational agility. But not quite yet. I know what you're thinking. The suspense is terrible. I hope it'll last. First, we have a few things to celebrate. Today is our birthday. That's right, it's the 1-year anniversary of In the Know. We kicked off our show last March with our very first guest, Matthew Daniel from Guild Education. And since then, we've produced 24 episodes featuring 22 awesome guests from across the employee experience landscape. We've talked disruption and how not to be a jerk with the world's greatest virtual keynote speaker, Sean Canungo. We played games while learning about gamification with industry expert Carl Kopp. And we ate burgers and talked talent strategy with Jennifer Calcamucci from Shake Shack. Last week, we even created our own guest using artificial intelligence. As you can tell, it's been lots of fun experimenting and playing with this format over the past year. And thanks to all of you for tuning in every Wednesday. And a special thanks to the ITK team. That's Risha, Andrea, Josh, Malia, Matt, Mark, and of course, producer Sam, for helping us share so many great ideas with the community over the past 24 episodes. Let's do another year. What do you say? And finally, we're celebrating some big changes over here at Exonify. But instead of me doing all of the talking today, I'll let my boss, Carol Lehman, give you all the details.
Carol Lehman, CEO of Exonify. You may have noticed that we look a little different lately. A refreshed logo, a new website, and updated product offerings. I wanted to share a bit more about why we did it, what it means as we continue to evolve as a company, and why you should get excited. Exonify has evolved from being the first employee knowledge platform in 2011 to a frontline enablement solution that's science-backed and proven to maximize the potential of workforces. So we're unveiling a new look to go with our new functionality. We're bolder, more modern, and even more confident in our proven learning, communication, and operations platform that's purpose-built for your workforce. Now more than ever, we're focused on connecting frontline success to business success. It's at the core of everything we do. So, I'm proud to reintroduce you to Exonify, how the frontline learns, connects, and gets things done. And I can't wait for you to see what our frontline enablement solution can do for your organization.
Pretty awesome, right? Huge kudos goes out to everyone at Exonify, especially the marketing and product teams, for ushering in the next chapter of the Exonify story. Be sure to stay tuned for even more splendiferous stuff coming very soon. But okay, that's enough celebrating. We have so much time and so little to do. Strike that. Reverse it. and welcome our special ITK guest, Lori Niles Hoffman. Lori is a senior learning strategist with over 20 years of L&D experience. Specializing in large-scale digital transformation, Lori is passionate about helping companies navigate the ambiguity of change. After leading and completing numerous edtech implementations, Lori has developed the database methodologies and frameworks that empower L&D teams to move from business support function to strategic business driver. Lori is currently based in Toronto, Canada, with one foot in Europe. Lori Niles Hoffman, you're in the know.
It is wonderful to be here. I'm just in complete awe of how far you've taken the full Wonka. I did not know what to expect when you started posting about that, but it's wonderful to be here. And thanks to you and the team for having me.
Thanks so much for being here. When we say we're going full Wonka, we go full Wonka at Exonify. No idea what that actually means. But Lori, you also are known for your own style of whimsy when it comes to using social media to make important points about challenges that we're facing in the workplace, especially when it comes to the topic of learning and development. So I want to take a look at one of your most recent posts and ask you to give us a bit of a play-by-play about the story you're trying to tell with this post.
Sure. So in this particular post, what's happening is it's a tractor plowing a field, but it has sensors. So it does not actually harm the bird, and the bird is protecting her nest. And I was using this as a metaphor for what's happening right now with L&D protecting their budget right now. So they see what's looming and they're petrified and they're trying to hold on to it. And in the end, everybody's all right, which I think was the message I was really trying to talk about. But also too that we are in precarious times. So I use these videos mostly as a way to talk about some of the hard things. The first reason I do videos is because I don't like to film myself. So I can rely on some animals and throw them in there. But to me, something like that is a lot more impactful and drives more conversation than simply saying budgets are being tightened, everyone's afraid. And that's a very hard message, whereas this, it opens up and I think it makes people feel more comfortable commenting and adding to the conversation when it comes to the tough things.
Absolutely. Great approach. Definitely stands out in a bit of a crowded conversation when it comes to things on social media. So there's another conversation I hear a lot about, especially in HR today, which is the idea of shifting from jobs to careers as a mentality that's going to help attract and retain great workers. So this often includes the idea of establishing career paths. And I'm curious to get your perspective on the idea of career paths and why they might not fit the current workplace.
Yeah, the idea of career paths, people love them because it gives predictability and it's something you can strive towards and it's all laid out. But the fact is, career paths really just don't address the rate of change and how our lives are going to be so radically different, how we work is going to be radically different in 3, 5, 10 years. Even think of the bomb that was dropped on us with ChatGPT and natural language processors and what that's even doing. So those things are going to continue to happen. If you have somebody so fixed in a very rigid career path, I think it doesn't leave them open to opportunities. I think it leaves talent behind. And I think it also prevents that person from, changing their minds, quite frankly. I mean, I've been everything, we talked about this before. I've been everything from a high school English teacher in Poland to a cake decorator at Baskin Robbins to a bank teller. And then I ended up here, so there's times, what's that phrase? And you might ask yourself, well, how did I get here? Well, I think it's quote the talking heads. There is that feeling. So that, I don't think people in their real lives go through that rigid career path.
And I can align with that personally, given that, like I said, in the beginning of our show, if I was a 19-year-old movie theater manager, what would that career path look like? And would it have me dressed up like Willy Wonka on the internet? Probably not. Although the fact that I made a 10-year stop in the middle at Disney probably explains all of what's going on here.
Yeah, it kind of influenced it a little bit.
A little bit. So you mentioned one of the buzziest words right now in the workplace space, L&D and HR space, being AI. But one of the other terms I hear a lot is skills, especially when it comes to talent strategy. So could you paint a picture? And when we talk about this idea of a skills-based organization, what does that look like in real life? Beyond the buzzwords and the kind of the theory side. So if you're in a skill-based organization, how does work get done? How do you make decisions about how work gets done? What does that really look like?
Sure. So there's actually we've seen three different layers of maturity. So start with the base, and that's really where companies a lot are right now, where they're just saying, okay, I'm going to get a skills taxonomy, map everybody against it. Okay, so I know what skills I have in my collective corporate wallet. fine. Then the other one is where we're saying, okay, I know what skills people have, and we're keeping an eye, usually using AI, usually using some, scraping platforms to determine what skills are going to be pertinent in the next 2-3 years, what we need to have on our radar, and what gaps do we actually have. And so we're trying to upskill to those or make sure that we are hiring the right people with those skills. Then the full, I hesitate to use the word full because I know full Wonka, and this is like full skills-based organization.
Full out today on everything.
Throw it all out. Okay, good. That's when companies, what they're doing is basically they become a more of a flat organization where job titles and roles are not as critical as what you actually do day to day is based on tasks based on your skills that you have. So a way for people to kind of wrap their heads around this, I mean, is to think of, you know, some of the large consulting agencies. I mean, they will have projects and they deploy people in those projects based on the skills that they have. It's like that done internally. And so IT already does a lot of this. If you look at the way that they're running sprints and teams that form and you know, dissipate and do particular chunks of work. I mean, that's the direction of travel. But it gets a little bit more complex when you think of areas outside of IT. But that's the direction companies are starting to go.
And when you think about those levels of maturity and the fact that organizations find themselves in different places when it comes to this idea of shifting from kind of rigid career path to a more skills-based strategy, how fast would you say this is becoming kind of a standard mindset or a standard practice within talent strategy?
Very, very fast. And I think it's in, I don't know of any organization that isn't, this isn't on their radar or they're already to the point of implementing it. And it's going to involve new technologies that are already being built, talent marketplaces, things like that. It is hitting right now.
And I heard you say something else related to this idea of skills-based strategies and learning and development. You specifically, I'll quote you as saying that L&D needs to stay in their lane when it comes to the idea of building a skill-based organization. So what did you mean by stay in their lane?
Okay, yeah, and I know that actually ruffled a lot of feathers, of course. What do I mean by staying in your own lane? Well, okay, a lot of times we'll get L&D leaders who will come to us and say, you know, we want to move to a skills-based organization. We want to buy a taxonomy. We're getting, you know, we're going to start mapping everybody. I'm like, hold on, this isn't just you. Right. This is going across the organization. Have you talked to talent? Have you talked to HR? Because really, the idea of a skills taxonomy and how they want to rank and all that, that's actually not an L&D responsibility. If you haven't been tasked with that, make sure you aren't running ahead. And I do see this happen in enterprise, organizations, you know, 100,000 people, everybody's off doing something. So you need to make sure that you are aligned. Now, if you've been tasked with owning it, that's a different thing. But I really don't think that's part of L&D. What L&D needs to get right in this is how do they upskill somebody from seed to fruit? And don't be distracted by all the other things. And what I mean by that is not just the content that you're developing, but we need to think about if we're going into a skills-based organization, what does it look like? Does skills development look like in that new model? So that means how are you building in those development opportunities where people are coached and mentored? How do they know which skills to develop? All those things, we need to get that part right. Let the other areas worry about even, you know, comp and ben and structure, all of that. That's not L&D's responsibility.
So digging into the L&D side of the story a little bit more. So there's obviously a lot of legacy investment, right? We spent a lot of time, a lot of years, a lot of money building structured learning programs, building a catalog of course content. Where does that legacy fit into this new idea of a skills-based approach?
The easiest way to look at that is you're probably going to need to blow some of those things up, okay? Because even the concept, I mean, we look at career progression in terms of people management, right? And like that's usually the first big learning that people encounter in terms of progression as they go on a new manager's course, right? That paradigm is going to shift. So when we look at these larger role-based curricula, we're probably going to need to dissect a lot of them, slice and dice them against skills. So it doesn't mean that content goes away. And it doesn't mean when I say slice and dice, I'm not talking about making it micro-learning. What I'm talking about is taking out that content and saying, okay, how does it align to particular skills? And then fitting it into that continuum that I mentioned before, that seed to fruit continuum for a particular skill. So that's going to be a different way of how we approach it.
Gotcha. And you mentioned earlier the technology side of the conversation, where there's technology being built up and integrated around the idea of tracking and kind of leveraging skills to power the way businesses run. So what real opportunity do you see attached to continuous upskilling and technology, especially maybe for audiences that historically don't have a lot of opportunity to continuously build their skills? And I'm thinking specifically, of course, about frontline workers who don't have a lot of time in their day or autonomy to really focus on developing themselves, while we really need to build that internal talent base, especially when we're facing, you know, difficulties recruiting, attracting, and retaining people.
Correct. So I wish I had a magic answer that, oh, technology, can you wave your magic wand here?
It's a walking stick, Lori. Because if this is a magic wand, I'm a children's party magician in the story. But it's a walking stick. That makes me the Wonka.
I got it. But the idea that, you know, technology is all of a sudden going to fix everything for people upskilling, that doesn't exist. Okay. And so, you know, and I say this continually to organizations where they say, you know, I go, well, what about frontline workers? And there's just crickets, you know, and it's like, okay, you have to give them the time and space to learn. Okay. That's just bare stakes minimum. And if you're not going to do that, you do not have a organization that is continuously upskilling, and you're going to have skills deficits. These are realities. I can't fix that for you. But we can get smarter about how we are equipping people with access to the learning, right? So, you know, this is, and some of these are just basics, like what devices are you going to have, and you know, and making sure Wi-Fi is available in language and all those sorts of things. So those are, take those things out. But I think what's going to get very interesting about the technologies that we have now is we're going to be able to integrate those technologies with actual real-time KPIs and technical systems that we don't usually have dialogues with. And so that's going to give us an idea that maybe somebody's already skilled in something. Maybe somebody just did something wrong once and was there a problem? So we're going to be able to pinpoint really what are upskilling gaps and then be able to close them more specifically. And I think right now we're still in the, oh, this person hasn't taken this course, so they must need to take this and that. And I think we can get far more precise. I think also too, the notion of, I'm very excited about talent marketplaces and the idea that you can go in for a 6-week stretch and, you know, grow on something. I don't think that just needs to be devoted to, you know, the senior staff. I think that, and it doesn't certainly need to be just the white collar workers. It's definitely also to the people who are working the front lines. And so we can use technology to source those people and find those skills for development. So it's an exciting, exciting place. My only caveat on that is data privacy, right? How much is it that Big Brother is tracking every mouse click and every time you touch a certain piece of equipment and whatnot? We have to be careful about some of that because I think we're starting, everybody says there's GDPR and it applies to learning and employees. I'm like, does it? Does it, like, do we really have the right to be forgotten? You know, are there things that really, you know, are being tracked that shouldn't be? So that's, I think, the one area where we have to be mindful. I also see, too, an interesting comment coming in from Bas. It says, should you spend more effort on skills that don't change as much as digital skills? Make sure that they're robust first. Yes, but I would also say, too, with some of those skills, you probably hired for them. So are people using them? Have you created a culture that uses them? I would be really looking at what pool you have first, before you go down that area. But the digital skills, are probably the ones that you are going to need to focus more on. And I love what Susan says, that she was, when they built the skills taxonomy, you were the only L&D person to see the HR. Yeah. And that's probably the right thing. HR, talent, comp, and Ben, all those people need to be involved.
Yeah, absolutely. This is definitely an organization-wide conversation about how we more effectively run our business and enable our people, not just a training conversation, as it were. And as you spoke to, I think we're at this interesting confluence of factors, right, in terms of the shifting nature of how work is done, the shifting landscape of technology and digital maturity across the workforce, the acceleration of AI and data practices, right? You can start to combine all of these things, and it starts to change the calculus of how we think about talent strategy. And that's what I ask a lot of organizations to do, is to say, if you're maybe a company of 400,000 people and 300 or maybe 350,000 of those people work in frontline roles in maybe distribution centers and retail stores, you might have been thinking about talent strategy as that smaller group of people who worked in the office. Right. Well, now with the introduction of remote hybrid work and the various other factors we've talked about, you can expand the definition of talent strategy to be more inclusive of the entire workforce. And then, like you said, it changes the calculus of what skills do you focus on? How do you highlight people who have skills that maybe they don't do in their job today, but could be really advantageous to helping the organization and helping them build an alternative career? So it's really an interesting time to start rethinking the nature of talent strategy more broadly and not just think about, well, this is a different way to recommend a new training course, as it were.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. And there's an interesting case study that was actually happened during when COVID hit at Marks and Spencer M&S in the UK. And what they were doing is their goal was to keep everybody employed through that time. And they looked at what skills people had that they maybe weren't using. So say you worked on a shop floor, but you had a social media background or marketing degree, right? Okay, we're going to throw you into that, you know? And so it was very interesting how they were able to pivot under into put people into roles that they, and to use skills that they weren't using, but they had them. Now, that was a very different time in that, the pressure and whatnot. You also can't assume that just because somebody has a skill that they want to use it. I think that's also too a really big part organization. I'm not going to be a cake decorator, I can make a really good rosette on a cake out of icing, but, probably not what I'm going to do day to day. So I think that's also another thing companies need to understand. And that also needs to be part of the whole discussion of career broadening. I say that instead of career progression.
Gotcha. I want to come back to something you said earlier that I think ties up the conversation nicely, which is around the idea of comfort that's often connected to the traditional career path. So What can organizations do to paint the picture for their employees so they can recognize the opportunity that's introduced by taking a skills-based approach and therefore dedicate the right amount of time, effort, and motivation to that, as opposed to that more rigid structure, I go from here to here to here, which in some cases can be more comfortable and assuring to people?
Good question. So the thing that I'm looking at right now is I think organizations need to invest in a chief skills officer. So that's somebody who's going to understand what skills are needed by the organization, where the gaps are, and help make those hard decisions. I don't think L&D should be making those decisions. That's another conversation. But they should be looking at the landscape and saying, okay, these are the gaps we have. These are the ones that we want to invest in. Secondly, I think we put too much on the people managers, and that whole concept of a people manager being the one to develop people they already have a day job, and I think we've tasked them with too much. So companies I see that are getting this right are actually doing coaching at scale. So they have an external vendor who does coaching with employees, all employees. This is not just your leadership ones or ones that are hypos. And what they're looking at is they know what the skills are in demand for the organization, and they're able to coach people towards those areas. Now, this is not saying that, everyone's going to have an interest in those new areas, but they're able to have those conversations that, and they have that bigger picture. And I think that to me is far more successful. The other final thing that we can do in terms of technology, and I don't see a lot of people doing this, is if we know what skills are in demand, just giving a content library, why don't we turn up the volume on skills that are in demand, turn down the volume on those that are maybe sunsetting. Right. And all too often we just go, here's a content library. Boom, we've given it. And you can take whatever you want. And isn't that wonderful? Well, no, maybe we can, just like on social media, we can use algorithms to tune some of these things. And I think that we need to get a lot better on that.
Absolutely. Last question for you, Lori, before I let you go.
Sure.
If you were a candy, what candy would you be?
I would be a coffee crisp. Now, Coffee Crisp is a chocolate bar that is only available in Canada. So being Canadian, I had to pick a Canadian confectionery. It's multi-layered, crispy. And I love coffee. Anyone who knows me, I drink every day. I start my day with a decaf venti iced decaf Americano. And I like to joke at the local Starbucks that it's cold and dark and like my soul.
All righty. Took that in a different direction right at the end there. That's okay. I would go with marshmallow peat, just because they get better the longer you have them, right? The longer you get to know, especially, you open them and just leave them there for a while, you have a better experience. But sometimes you really only need to deal with them once a year. So I think that has a good description for me. So Lori, thank you so much for joining us on a very Wonka-filled edition of In the Know today. We'd like to thank you for your time and contribution to the professional community by making a donation to a charity of your choice. So could you tell us a little bit about a cause that you're particularly passionate about?
Yes, the one that I chose for this was called Dreamflight. And Dreamflight is an organization in the UK that takes children who have either physical needs that typically would prevent them from being able to travel, and it gives them a week at Disneyland.
They're very familiar to me as well. So great, great selection. Thank you again so much. How can people connect with you after our episode today? Follow the great work you're doing at Niles Nolan.
Yep. Always can find me on LinkedIn. That's probably the best place. So just look up Lori Niles Hoffman or Niles Nolan, and I'm sure we'll show up.
Awesome. So thank you again so much to Lori Niles Hoffman for sharing her insights into the importance of upskilling for building careers in the modern workplace. Did you have a good time on our tour today? And be sure to subscribe to ITK. Head over to exonify.com/ITK for show announcements and reminders. You can also check out the entire ITK collection on the Exonify YouTube channel or listen to In the Know on your favorite podcast app. Things are going to get even more interesting and a little spicy on the next episode of In the Know, because some children, they dream of owning a chocolate factory. I've had a lifelong dream of eating increasingly spicy chicken wings while talking on the internet. And that's what we're doing in 2 weeks' time. We'll be joined by Ryan Dillon. Yes, another Dillon. Ryan hosts his own online talk show with Thought Industries, where he talks to his guests about the world of customer education. And they just happen to do it while eating increasingly spicy chicken wings, a la Hot Ones from YouTube. Now Ryan is bringing his sauce collection to ITK as we discuss the critical role education plays in customer retention. So tune in again on Wednesday, April 14th at 11:30 a.m. Eastern for the long-anticipated Hot Takes In the Know crossover event. Until then, I've been JD. Now you're in the know, and always remember, if you want to view paradise, simply look around and view it. Anything you want to, do it. Want to change the world? Well, you know how it goes. I'll see you next time.